little less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more bite, a little less spark. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mind and open up your heart and maybe satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Baby, close your eyes and listen to the music. Dig to the summer breeze. It's a groovy night and I can show you how to use it. To come along with me and put your mind at ease. Hey! Less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction. A little more bite, a little less bark. A little less fight, a little more spark. Shut your mouth and open up your heart. And baby, satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Come on, baby, I'm tired of talking. Grab your coat and let's start walking. Come on, come on. Come on, come on.
Come on, come on.
Don't procrastinate, don't articulate. Girl, it's getting late. You just sit and wait around. A little less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more fight, a little less spark. A little less fight, a little more spark. Set your mouth and open up your heart. Baby, satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Satisfy me, baby. Satisfy me, baby. Satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Satisfy me, girl. Satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Satisfy me, baby. Satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby.
Right there. Yes, dear listeners, welcome to this one once again, another Sunday morning session here with yours truly, me, Dwight, here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And what we always do on Sunday mornings, we give you my Sunday morning take specifically from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. That's where we meet each other, specifically at the end or at the start, whichever one you wish to position, where you want to position your Sunday mornings. Whether it be at the start of your 7-day week or at the end of your 7-day week, you can do so. It's up to you. But the main point is, it still is a Sunday, and we still have to meet each other, specifically here on Eagle FM, and engage with the interesting, the peculiar, the weird, the quirky, and I already mentioned interesting, but you know what, the intriguing part of things. So let me just, you know, sort of like exhaust English and its vocabulary in that particular direction. Once again, good morning, welcome, and you find yourself here on my Sunday morning take as we look into, I'm not here to scare you, but we're here to talk about interesting and thus also puzzling developments with regards to certain particular geographical locations. One is a particular event that went somewhat askew, and another one is also primarily looking into a talking point that has been debunked, but there is still some lasting particular superstition around it and what it actually means specifically in maritime travel. So that's traveling by boat across the seas, flying in this other particular geographic location in the Caribbean, and primarily some of the most interesting and puzzling disappearances of people, either them being pilots or them being sailboats in human history. For this morning's particular session, dear listeners, the interesting thing has always been that we speak about the problematic case of undefined instances where things actually do go awry. The word awry also implies things do go wrong or they don't go as planned for air transport, for the air transport sector in one scenario. In other cases, it is also for the shipping sector as well. And things like the disappearances of planes and even their pilots over the planned routes that they aimed to first conquer, or even worse, that they have flown probably a million times over, are instances that have been recorded in human history. The most famous one I will share with you just in a short while. Now we look into this morning's session into the Bermuda Triangle, its mysticism. I say the word mysticism because, first and foremost, ships do travel through it. Planes do fly through it. It doesn't seem like there's anything peculiar about this particular location in the Caribbean. However, it does have a peculiar history to it, and it does have a peculiar scenario in terms of where airplanes will fly into it, and people can't find the airplane. Ships will sail into it and people can't find the ship. And this has been puzzling because with the advancements obviously in satellite technology, which is what most of the airplanes and the ships use today. I mean, you guys heard about the example that Helmut loves to bring up specifically on the home run regarding GPS, global positioning system, which uses satellites for that matter, is primarily because, well, authorities need to know which boats are where on the ships, as well as also insurance companies that own the shipping, the shipping companies that own the ships, or the vessels. They need to know where their boats are. They need to know where their investments are. And it's also to help specifically with the promise of, you know, what is being transported. The product or whatever's being transported also needs to be tracked. So we have seen these advancements take place. These advancements obviously try to improve trade relations and also try to improve meet the particular promise that globalization has aimed or has been preaching for the better part of 20 years, that we need to become this fused economic system across the world. All geographic locations from one continent to the next needs to trade with each other, needs to have heightened trade with each other. But there have been anomalies. And these particular anomalies let's rather say they were exceptions. I'll still stay to the term exceptions because some of these particular stories that I'm going to share now with you, some of these particular events that I'm going to share with you, they do have superstition sort of like linked to them. They don't explain anything. However, authorities have discovered in terms of some problematic scenarios where especially fishing vessels sailed into one particular geographic location. This is now, I'm talking now the second sort of like triangle, the one known as the Devil's Triangle in just outside Japan. It's literally closer to Japan than any other country. And it has a problematic scenario because it seems there's a lot of volcanic or seismic activity in that specific setting. And it has been drenched in superstition, specifically by fishermen, Japanese fishermen, and other particular maritime activities, sailors from other maritime activities, which have made the particular investigation also a little bit peculiar, because now you don't know, are you dealing with an actual anomaly? Or are you just dealing with superstition, because no one has gone to investigate why do boats get wrecked when they sail past a specific island or past a specific location just off the Japanese southern coast. The last island is Iwo Jima, apparently. No, it's not Iwo Jima. There's another island, that's the last one. But the island of Iwo Jima, where they had the Second World War fights, if you sail apparently past up that particular location, if you sail past that island, something happens to the boat. The boat gets crashed or the boat sinks and something happens. And it has been investigated specifically because of underwater volcanic activity. However, underwater volcanic activity is monitored. It is monitored. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we step back into another short musical break. After that, we get into earnest, or into the serious part of our conversation for this morning session of My Sunday Morning Take. You're in my company, once again, from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Let's enjoy it. Let's have that conversation, and we'll see each other right after the short musical break.
Oh, when the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you.
Come back there from this particular tracks that we just had for the musical break, that being Jefferson Airplane with Somebody to Love. Before that, it was a little bit of the Rolling Stones with The Street Fighting Man. Now, this is where we get into the meat of today's particular conversation, because you'd be asking me, Dwight, where have disappearances of aircraft, of boats, and things taken place? Well, let's firstly start off with the knowns. I call them the knowns because we have probably seen this in 2014, primarily with the airplane Malaysia 370, Malaysia Airlines flight 370, the disappearance that took place. And it was a highly publicized disappearance, and a very unfortunate event primarily because it was an airplane that just flew in a direction it wasn't supposed to be flying in. And when I say it wasn't supposed to be flying in, you can start asking various kinds of questions. Now, these particular questions have not been formally in the broader, you know, the broader global public sphere has not been answered entirely. So the disappearance of Flight 370, or in the weeks after its disappearance, let me rather say it that way, there were a lot of theories that ranged from mechanical failure to the pilot committing suicide, the loss of the ACARS, that's a specific signal, and the transponder signals also helped to spur on these particular theories and these particular speculations, specifically about the form of a hijacking potentially, or a potential hijacking that would have taken place. But no individual and no group claimed responsibility of what happened to the plane. This was still the most puzzling thing because I tried understanding, okay, was this another particular potential threat? What do you call a threat? What's the thing's name, man? A terrorist threat or terror threat? Because that's the reason why the war against terror, the global war against terror, technically has seen the heightened restrictions and security at airports. That is also one of the reasons ultimately why Namibia had to increase its particular protectionism, or not protectionism, its security measures at Osia Kutaka International. One of the other particular concerns was also obviously how to respond to emergency scenarios, and obviously the kind of aircraft that can be landed at Osia Kutaka International. So there are still a whole range of things, primarily that, you know, you have to look at, because our airport will not be able to stay at the same size it currently is. It will need further growth, further expansion, and further development applied to it. So the current state, the current situation it is not even the most desired situation that we want. It will have to be developed further. And yes, guys, it will probably cost the 6 or 7 billion. If you guys remember the 6 or 7 billion cost for upgrading our airport that happened in the first term of President Geingob before COVID, it will have to cost that. So yes, an airport does cost 6 or 7 billion Namibian dollars. Your questions would have been, 6 or 7 billion US would have been a problem. Definitely, definitely. So when we look at that particular scenario, yes, the global war on terror has led to certain particular developments, and these developments are around the investments in security measures. Now, the flight, since no one had claimed it after the first 5 days after its disappearance, and this was what was making things more peculiar about this particular flight, it seemed unlikely that hijackers would have flown the plane into the southern Indian Ocean, because the plane crashed on the other side of Madagascar. And I say, when I say on the other side, it's literally in the middle, the distance was literally in the middle of the southern Indian Ocean, between Madagascar and Australia. Now, on the other side of Madagascar, you find the French territory of Reunion, the island I want to go see. It's a pretty lovely island. On the other side of that island, there is, I think it's Mauritius, because Seychelles is to the north of Mauritius. It's Mauritius on the other side of Reunion. And then it's on the other side of Mauritius that the airplane crashed. Now, on the other side of Mauritius is also the American / British naval base, the Chagos Islands, with the naval base, naval base. It's a refueling station for the British and the American navies when they patrol across the global seas. Yes, they do that. Somewhere not far from that, the Chagos Islands, the airplane crashed. Now, this was an interesting particular development, primarily that because the signals had likely been switched off from inside the aircraft, suggested potentially a suicide by one of the crew, potentially. But nothing obviously suspicious was also initially found in the behavior of the captain, who was identified as Zahari Ahmad Shah, and the first officer, Farik Abdul Hamid, or the cabin crew, who immediately prior to the flight, would obviously have been assessed. Back in 2016, 2 years after 2014, primarily, just so that you know, is that the flight itself was reported in the New York Magazine, highlighted that the captain the flight captain, that being Shah, Zahari Shah, on his home's flight simulator, had flown over the southern Indian Ocean less than a month before the plane had vanished. Now, a simulated flight that closely matched the missing aircraft's final path, this primarily also startled, people who read that article. The revelation also, then there was a further revelation from this, is that in addition to the release of greater information about the pilot's personal life, which also provided some sort of, legitimacy to the notion of a premeditated pilot-induced mass murder-suicide. Now, the concern is, dear listeners, that they did find debris, but not sufficient enough debris. So, who was involved in the search? It was a global effort. Most notably, the Australian Navy was the closest to try and solve this mystery and try and collect the necessary technology and the necessary proof, and potentially also try and retrieve any particular remains of passengers and crew from the flight. Now, after the discovery of the debris, some speculated that Flight 370 was shot down, but there's also no evidence of shrapnel from a missile or other projectiles that have been found. Now, that's Flight 370. That's case number one. And it still technically is slightly open to interpretation. Now, we get into other puzzling plane disappearances. And there are seven of them, apparently. I say apparently because there potentially could be more. But we take the first particular seven that we obviously, can look at as peculiarities. Now, over the years as well, aircraft have vanished without a trace that have also left a lot of unanswered questions, even after thorough investigations have been concluded or have been done. Now, the downside is an investigation is supposed to give actually more answers and provide more answers. It's not supposed to go technically cold. If you guys ever watched the interesting documentaries about cold cases, where you sometimes find out it's the limitations of technology of the day that lead the investigators in many scenarios to technically put a case that they've been working on ice. And in some scenarios, they have to wait for technology, specifically either it being forensic technology or a certain act to be passed that includes technology, forensic technology in surveilling, in assessing, in measuring, in comparing, in storing data, in sharing data, in retrieving data that was unretrievable at certain instances, and thus enhancing the ability to catch the criminals. Now, one such particular scenario also exists primarily in the discussion of when you look at these disappearances, because yes, unfortunately, the investigators in many scenarios when these kinds of disasters happen, they have to approach their investigations with some sort of a forensic, approach and analysis. Now, in some cases, they tried being thorough. They tried highlighting problem areas, potentially trying to enhance what had happened, but I mean, there was no sort of like a forensic analysis back in 1928 when the most famous of these particular plane disappearances happened on our list for this morning. The second also in, or actually the fifth or the third in 1947. And most of them primarily were around the 40s, 50s and before then. Now we start off with one of the most famous of these particular air disappearances is that of the woman pilot Amelia Earhart. Now, Earhart was to be considered the first woman to cross the Atlantic Ocean in an airplane in 1928. And she was then the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean once again in 1932. So Amelia Earhart proved to people across the globe how high women could actually go. You know, they could also pilot airplanes. However, her story met a tragic and mysterious end in July of 1937, when, specifically on a trip to fly around the world, yes, her attempt was to fly around the world to circumnavigate the globe. Her plane, which was a twin-engine Lockheed Electra, disappeared near the International Dateline in the Central Pacific Ocean. Although there exists a great deal of speculation by scholars and mystics about the exact circumstances of her disappearance, such as the possibility of her being stranded upon an uninhabited island for years, nothing has been known with absolute certainty. Now, I'm explaining this once again, guys. What happened to Amelia Earhart was before air crash, what they call those guys, air crash investigators were formed. Was before the Global Alliance, what's the UN's International Air Transport Organization, ICAO? ICAO, or is it IATA? You have ICAO and you have IATA, the two organizations. One of them is the UN one. Before these two organizations actually existed. And they also help with global coordination, specifically in when accidents happen, and specifically when it's associated to the air travel industry. The biggest concern is you've got to find answers to provide some sort of surety, because it's a technology, specifically air travel, is usually deemed. Air travel is usually sold as the safest mode of transport. I'll say it again. Yes, guys, they actually, I asked the person that told me that statement, and I told them, and if the airplane stops in the middle of the air, how can it be safe? Because we've all seen what happens with a car when it doesn't have petrol, or when it breaks down, it stops in the middle of the road. So the assumption would be that the airplane is always in tip-top shape, that it's always serviced and it's got, you know, it's still within its particular range of usage. And it's an anomaly. It still boggles me. It literally boggles me. Probably the safest travel, the safest mode of travel that you transport that you can find is by road and by train. I'll say it again, by road and by train. The next particular event or disappearance that occurred was the Flying Tiger Flight 739. Now, the Flying Tiger 739, its particular disappearance happened in the middle of March 1962 during the early stages of the Vietnam War. Now, this also gets dodgy, because early stages of a conflict increases casualties, specifically with air transport and air travel. Why? Just listen to this. Now, the United States Army's Flying Tiger Flight 739 vanished over the seemingly bottomless Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean on its way to the Philippines from Guam. Approximately an hour after the plane's final communication, members of a Standard Oil tanker in the area reported to have witnessed a luminous explosion in the sky, which some investigators probably linked to the plane. I say probably linked, because they say they have linked it, but it's obviously, if you don't find any evidence, then you can't say it is exactly that particular instance, but the feeling would be there, but it's just unproven. No distress calls were also received by any air traffic control centers, making it difficult to pin down exactly when things began to go wrong for those on board. Now, after an exhaustive search party, which comprised of 1,300 people, 48 aircraft, and 8 surface vessels, all of which covered roughly 144,000 square miles, which is probably close to 150,000 square kilometers of ocean, it proved entirely unsuccessful as rumors ran rampant throughout the United States as to what had happened. Now, the theories ranged from claims that it was accidentally shot down by the U.S. government, who then covered their tracks, to simple engine and communication failures. The unfortunate scenario or reality is that the true cause still remains elusive, and no one may even know what really happened. So, this is another cold case, specifically in air transport. Just to help you with the Mariana Trench explanation, it's one of the deepest points. It's the biggest... No. The Mariana Trench, yeah, the Mariana Trench is the deepest canyon on the planet. Just so that you guys know. So the Mariana Trench, the deep sea trench in the floor of the northwestern or the of the western North Pacific Ocean is known as the deepest such trench on Earth. It's located mostly east as well as south of the Mariana Islands, and it is part of the Western Pacific system of oceanic trenches that coincides with the subduction zones, which are points where two adjacent tectonic plates actually collide. So what it means, the trench is formed because two tectonic plates are colliding with each other, and they are so strong and technically equal to each other in positioning that they are pushing each other down, the two tectonic plates, which creates a trench. Now, the next particular disappearance, the Stendek, which was the British South American Airways Lancastrian plane, which went missing on the 2nd of August 1947. And this was as it was finishing its final leg of a connecting flight from Buenos Aires in Argentina to Santiago, which I suspect was Chile. So it was flying across the Andean Mountains. Now, the investigators in the air traffic control centers alike were mystified, as the last communication that was received by the Chilean Air Force operator was the cryptic message Stendek, which was long believed to be mistyped. However, over 50 years later, in the late 1990s, pieces of the wreckage began to emerge in the Andes Mountains, and in 2000, various body parts from the flight's passengers were also found, well preserved by the glacial ice, despite the circulating rumors ranging from alien abduction to Nazi spies and stolen gold and an in-depth investigation that supposedly uncovered that the inclement weather had caused the crash, and determined that the most probable meaning of the strange communication was based on a World War II code, deciphered as severe turbulence encountered, now descending, emergency crash landing. Which is pretty cool. I mean, to write a message known as Stendek. The next particular disappearance, which was also a little bit awkward in its own right, and this is where we get into the geographic zones, but we'll get into the geographic zones in the second half of this morning's session here on my Sunday morning take. This is the disappearance of Flight 19 of the Bermuda in the Bermuda Triangle. Now, the Bermuda Triangle, as I mentioned, guys, is in the Caribbean, to be exact. Well, it seems like Bermuda is actually right in front of the United States on the map that I've got in front of me. But it does have also a weird element primarily of air activity and naval activity, or let me rather say shipping activity. And it's probably the most documented region in the seas, specifically in the Atlantic Ocean side of things, pertaining towards disappearances, odd anomalies of weather, supposedly. The famous King Kong film of Jack Black, and what was the other character's name? The other actor's name. It was Jack Black and someone else. And Adrian Brody, yeah. Of Jack Black and Adrian Brody here 2015-ish. They positioned the you know, the island that King Kong is based on, supposedly is off the, you know, off the west coast of the United, no, the east coast of the United States, here close to the Bermuda Triangle zone. I know it's just fiction, but they try to position it in that sense so as to heighten the mysticism in the storytelling. Now, getting back to the factualities that we always look at in our show, is Flight 19 across the Bermuda Triangle was another particular disappearance. Perhaps the most disputed plane disappearance occurred in early December of 1945, when not one but six planes vanished, which have yet to be recovered. That's why I said it's probably the one that's the most famous. On one specific day, in average weather conditions, five Avenger torpedo bombers. On one specific day. I'll say it again. On one specific day, five military planes disappeared, which are well known in the aviation community for their immensity. They took off from their base in Fort Lauderdale in Florida for a bombing practice in what has since become known as the Bermuda Triangle. Now, after experiencing problems with their compasses, which is known to happen in that area specifically as well as in the Chinese Sea, which is the other location, the five planes lost communication with the ground station. However, the ground station could still follow communication between the pilots of the planes. They lost communication with the ground station, but the ground station could hear that the planes were talking to each other. The pilots were talking to each other in each of the five planes. Now, what's also peculiar, guys, is that if you've ever sat in an airplane where it's just literally, you know, the fuselage, which is the walls of the airplane, is literally just a sheet of metal between you and what is outside, which is cold temperature, basically. It's not as, you know, technically safe. Why I say that is primarily, the airplanes back then, in the 1940s, Second World War, in the region of the Second World War aspect, they were not made of obviously the same particular standard as today. They didn't obviously have all the particular bells and whistles. Satellites didn't exist back then as well, because what was needed was a lot of relay stations to, you know, for tracing and tracking and tracing to be maintained. And most of those particular technologies were installed on the surface of the earth. They were on the ground. So, as you do know, that primarily what does happen is weather, technically, which usually is in the sky, can impact any communication that takes place on the ground. And specifically, if you are in an airplane that's in the sky with, let's say, an electrical storm that you're about to approach, and much of the relay infrastructure, the signal relaying infrastructure, is positioned on the ground, it makes things difficult, specifically for the ground to be able to track and trace you. But with the satellites now, what it does is that the satellites bounce signals across large areas of the planet. So what happened here specifically, as the ground control were able to monitor and listen to the conversations between the pilots while the pilots lost communication with ground control, it was noted specifically that during this particular instance, that the pilots became disoriented as to where they were to their locations, and that decided that once the first plane dropped below 10 gallons of fuel all planes were to ditch to the sea. Now, an intensive rescue mission then ensued immediately by the American Coast Guard and the Navy, where they covered at least 700,000 square kilometers over 5 days, during which another plane carrying 13 passengers also disappeared, which was also never to be found again. And the only clue as to its particular fate was a report from an ocean liner that was in the supposed location of the plane at the specific time, claiming to have seen a giant fireball in the sky. That's the only record, the only record that exists specifically, and that's from an ocean liner. An ocean liner is, you know, these guys, these holiday ships that you sail on. However, to date, no debris of the 6 missing planes or their passengers have been found, which also sparks the mysterious aura surrounding the legendary Bermuda Triangle. We get into the next particular disappearance, or aviation disappearance, and this one comes from a famous, it was famous back then. And this is the disappearance of Glenn Miller over the English Channel between France and the UK. So by mid-December of 1944, Glenn Miller had already secured his place in world history as one of the greatest big band leaders and as a true innovator of the swing genre. So it was that specific, musical genre that existed back in the 1940s, 1930s. However, when the plane he boarded was never seen again after its takeoff, his status also grew to that of an American legend. Now, as the plane, which was headed to Paris from London, departed on a cold, foggy day and no other apparent conclusions could be drawn, the official report of the missing plane ruled that it must have crashed in the English Channel. But everyone would have seen it. Let me say this again. Everyone would have seen it because they are actually islands in the English Channel. And this was supposedly as a result of iced over wings or an engine that had complications. However, the ambiguous ruling also failed to, you know, to highlight potentially a distraught population that had just lost one of its greatest morale boosters during the Second World War period. Also, on top of this, gossip ensued about what had actually happened. Theories were being generated and espoused and shared and, you know, distributed, ranging from the famed musician secretly landing only to die in a hospital from cancer only days later, to the plane being accidentally bombed by friendly fire from English planes who were shooting bombs that were originally supposed to be intended for an aborted mission. And then none of these particular theories have been verified to a satisfactory level. All that is known with certainty was that the airplane left for its seemingly very short trip on 15 December and never arrived at its intended destination in Paris. The next disappearance is the British South American Airways Star Tiger. Now, on 30 January of 1948, and everything seems to be happening in the 40s, a British South American Airways Avro Tudor IV plane, which was named Star Tiger, took off from Azores Archipelago in order to complete the last leg of a flight from London to Bermuda. Now, prior to takeoff, it was noted that the plane had endured problems with a heater as well as a malfunctioning compass. However, the plane continued on its schedule behind a Lancastrian plane that served as a lookout for signs of tempestuous weather. So there was an airplane flying in front of this particular plane itself, just to guide it for any weather. So to keep the plane at a warmer temperature, it flew extremely low at about 2,000 feet in the sky, which tried to eliminate virtually any sort of wiggle room if a problem was to arise. Now also, the low altitude caused the plane to burn fuel at a much faster rate than if it had been flying at a more appropriate height. So when the Lancastrian plane successfully landed and was not immediately followed by the Star Tiger, the ground control began to worry. Remember, they had to fly from London to Bermuda. Yes, the Bermuda. Now, the rescue crews searched without luck, and all 25 passengers and the 6 crew members were never again heard of, leaving the investigators to conclude that in connection to the whereabouts of the plane itself, it may be said that no more baffling problem has ever been presented. And that's a direct quote, apparently, from the investigators themselves. Recent investigators also blamed the unreliable design of the plane, possible gales that could have blown it straight into the sea, and the plane's decision also to fly so low. What is known, unfortunately, is that not so much as a life preserver or piece of broken glass has ever been found in connection to the Star Tiger. And then finally, just as we reach the midway point of this morning's session here on My Sunday Morning Take, there was the other British South American Airways airplane, the Star Ariel. Now, the Star Ariel, its particular event happened 1 year after the disappearance of the Star Tiger, the plane we just spoke about. Another British South American Airways plane, flying from Bermuda to Jamaica on 17 January of 1949, disappeared completely. One hour after its departure, the Star Ariel made a routine communication noting its location to the ground station, and shortly afterwards, apparently ceased to exist at an altitude of 18,000 feet. Now, because of suspected communication complications, a rescue party was not able to begin its search until 7.5 hours later, by which time any remnants of the plane could have begun their descent to the ocean floor if it crashed. At that time as well, investigators were able to rule out 3 common scenarios. The plane running out on fuel, or running out of fuel, which seemed implausible as specifically at the height that it was. Any errors that possibly could have been accredited to the pilot. And also inclement weather, as the report stated that clear skies were present in the area. Now, the British civil servants in charge of the investigation noted that some external cause may have overwhelmed both man and machine, is what they said. This is an exact excerpt from the crash report back then, which inadvertently also inspired a whole bunch of theories based upon mere conjecture by the common population. However, with time, some experts have claimed that whatever happened must have happened very quickly, without warning, and also therefore leading them to believe that there was an explosion resulting from a combination of defects that were supposedly inherent in the plane's design and the rare circumstances of these particular defects actually leading to some sort of tragedy. No debris was found, even though, you know, many of the theories persisted even, you know, as far as things go. And all 20 passengers were reported missing and later on presumed dead. We're going to take a short musical break, dear listeners. And after that musical break, we come back heading into this rest of the second half of this morning's session here on your number one talker station. This is My Sunday Morning Take. Coming back there from the sounds specifically of Jamiroquai was White Knuckle Ride. Before that, it was the sounds of Jungle with the song Back on 74. And it brings up about, you know, just past the midway point at about 10 past 6 a.m. If you've just woken up, good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And primarily, as we always do here, between 5 and 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, you're in my company. We have the interesting talking points and discussions based upon history, based upon geography, everything a little bit, and everything in the in between that helps to cover and also gel the stories that we actually get to share here, specifically on your Sunday morning sessions, and primarily what this all entails or looks like. Now, where we left off, we went through the most, the seven most intriguing air disappearance or, you know, air transport disappearances, which in their own rights and in their own merit, they are peculiar. Obviously, the one that took place in South America, that had to cross from Buenos Aires to Santiago in Chile, because they just had to fly across the Andes Mountains, that was probably the saddest of them all. The others, no concrete evidence until today. If you guys, you know, noticed in the particular seven events, only one has had debris, you know, remains of the passengers and the crew, and ultimately being able to find well-preserved, you know, of well-preserved instances of what is left of, what was left of that flight back then in the Andes Mountains in South America. But for all the other particular flights, nothing, not even a trail of smoke or anything of that sort was found afterwards, which makes things very peculiar. Now we head into these particular zones, these unexpected zones. So I'll start with the Bermuda Triangle first. Let me start with that one first, because that one has had the most mention so far. Now, the Bermuda Triangle is a section of the North Atlantic Sea, or the North Atlantic Ocean. Sorry, it's not a sea. It spans, the one point comes from, starts from Florida. Then it heads north to the Bermuda Island, or islands. Then it stretches from the Bermuda Islands to create the triangle. It stretches from the Bermuda Islands down south to, what's that, Puerto Rico. And then Puerto Rico connects back to Florida, which is the southern tip of Florida, the state of Florida in the United States. So it's literally just right outside American airspace and within American airspace. Specifically, you know, your airspace similarly also is the same size as your national waters, you know, in terms of giving you that particular sovereignty as a nation. So that's the span of the Bermuda Triangle. Now, this is a stretch of sea. It's a big stretch of sea. Unfortunately, it's massive. It's massive, specifically. But the Bermuda Triangle, in its own right, is literally a coordination between three particular geographic locations. Now, in between, there are also islands known as the Bahamas and as the Turks and Caicos Islands, which are also a UK territory. The Bermuda Triangle is a section of real estate wherein more than 50 ships and 20 airplanes have mysteriously disappeared. I can't say are said to have disappeared, because they disappeared there. Because they did disappear there. People don't know where they are. Authorities don't know what happened to these particular vessels and planes. The area, whose boundaries are not universally agreed upon, has a triangular shape that reaches approximately from the Atlantic Ocean of Florida to Bermuda, the islands in the north, to the islands down in the Greater Antilles. The islands in the Greater Antilles is now where Puerto Rico finds itself. Which is a bit puzzling, because Puerto Rico is on the other side of the Dominican Republic. But anyway, yeah. Now, the estimates of the Bermuda Triangle's total area of range is about 500,000 to 1.5 million square miles, which is about 1.3 million square kilometers to 3.9 square kilometers, 3.9 million square kilometers in size, which is a lot of real estate, just to let you know there. Now, reports of unexplained occurrences in the region date to the mid-19th century, where some ships were discovered completely abandoned for no apparent reason. Other ships had transmitted no distress signals and were never seen or heard of again. Aircraft have been reported and then vanished. And rescue missions are said to have also vanished when flying in the area. However, wreckages have not been found, and some of the theories advanced to explain the repeated mysteries as being fanciful. Now, although the theories of supernatural causes for these disappearances are, you know, they are in like overload, geophysical and environmental factors are most likely responsible. One hypothesis that comes through is that the pilots apparently failed to account for the ergonic line. The ergonic line is a place at which there is no need to compensate for the magnetic compass variation. Because, just like I mentioned a little bit earlier, apparently if you fly in that specific zone, which is the Bermuda Triangle, there's a specific zone within the Bermuda Triangle where your compass just is not a very, a very reliable instrument at that time. And it happens, and it also happens in the Pacific Ocean as well. Just so that you know. So that scenario does happen. Now, if you're going to wonder, why is it that your compass would not become reliable? Because a compass is something that is supposed to help you with reliable direction. Well, let me give you another theory that even highlights specifically what happens with a compass when you're on land in certain parts of the world. So, as you guys know, there is the true north, and then there is the magnetic north. There's technically three of them. There's a magnetic north, a true north, and what do they call the other one? I think it's the geographic north or something like that. But since the compass, when you've ever seen a compass, gives you two indicators of north. One is the written indicator, literally on the compass itself, and the second one is what the compass needle does. Because the aim for you is to understand where you are, which direction to go to, and how to navigate. Now, I watched Bear Grylls one day, when before the debunking theories of how Bear Grylls tries to show us how to survive in the wild. So I watched Bear Grylls one day with my younger brother, and this time Bear Grylls showed a very interesting trick that they teach in militaries. They teach you how to use your watch instead of a compass if you don't have a compass. So Bear Grylls had a compass on him, and he had his watch with him. And then he said, because of the specific location that he is walking through, that he's navigating through, he highlighted an oddity that I've never heard of. Now, if you don't know, guys, there are certain mountains that have, is it iron or something. It's a different kind of a mineral in it. Certain mountains around the world, they've got the specific resource in them. And if you are in the vicinity of these mountains, in a valley or in at the foot of the mountain itself even, and you pull out your compass goes haywire. It literally doesn't give you an indication what is north. It shows you west instead of north. It shows you south. Some cases, it just goes haywire. Why? Because your compass has a magnet in it, and it's trying to find the magnetic north. However, certain positions on the planet distorts that magnetism, that element of trying to find the magnetic north, because the magnetic north then tells you where true north is. And then he highlighted, if that happens, if you find yourself somewhere out in the bush, or somewhere in a different place, or you are a survivor somewhere, for example, like these particular events that I'm highlighting and sharing with you, use your watch. And your watch will tell you how to find east and west, because the aim of using a watch is actually to find east and west. The aim of your watch is to find east and west. And he showed a very lovely trick there. And till today, I've tried, you know, understanding that particular scenario as well, primarily of there are certain things that can cause a compass to literally become an unreliable instrument at certain particular positions. So yes, if you're wondering why I explained to you the aspect of what happened to what is the agonic line, this is primarily where sailors and pilots have to know about certain geographic indicators, specifically for the jobs that they do when they fly and when they sail. They've got to know that there are certain spots that they're going to enter into, which is going to create complications for their navigation equipment, which is your compass. They always have a compass. Even the modern airplanes today, they do have a compass. And the compass this time is guided by satellites, because they, now they have GPS and all those positioning systems. So, the Bermuda Triangle in its own right, as highlighted a little bit earlier, is that it creates complications for pilots and sailors alike, because they don't account for the agonic line. This is obviously where the magnetic compass becomes unreliable in this particular scenario. This results in significant navigational errors and in some cases, in more severe cases, catastrophes. Another popular theory is that the missing vessels were potentially felled by so-called rogue waves, which are massive waves that can reach heights of up to 100 feet, which is about 30 meters in height, and would theoretically be powerful enough to destroy all evidence of a ship or an airplane. On the indication of rogue waves, I also recently saw what's the platform's name? YouTube specifically, where the person who made the video, they didn't record anything, because the video is someone else's recording of what rogue waves look like. Now the downside is, this was taken from a fishing boat, those fishing trawlers that fish there in the North Atlantic, is it shows the size of the wave itself. And sometimes the dangers that these shipping crews alike and their vessels face, primarily in the North Atlantic and in the Atlantic Ocean. The Atlantic Ocean above the equator. Because I don't know how unpredictable the Atlantic Ocean here with us is, here in Namibia. So, they showed what rogue waves look like. Rogue waves are ugly. You don't hear it. You don't see it. I remember the one interview regarding a drowning incident that we had here on Eagle FM back in 2023, 2022. I interviewed Sheriff Marshal, representative, that being Mr. Sean Nodier at the time. And he gave an explanation specifically with regards to drownings, you know, how do drownings actually, in some cases, happen for children. And he explained something that I did experience once, the undercurrents. An undercurrent is a current that you don't see. You see the wave coming here in front of you. That's what's obvious to you. But you don't know what's happening below the wave. And it's one of the things primarily, yes, nature does provide a lot of particular benefits and a lot of particular positives. Specifically, if you look at energy generation, they use what the waves do and the current systems to generate hydroelectric electricity or hydroelectric power. But when we talk about an independent source like an ocean, an independent energy source like an ocean, things become problematic. They become problematic. Why do they become problematic? Well, first and foremost, here's the thing about waves and the science of waves, the natural science on waves, is there are so many currents in the ocean, right? And you can see them all because there are lovely illustrations of these currents. But when you ask the question, where do these currents come from? Two exist. Two theories exist. One theory is that some of the currents come from the South Pole. The South Pole generates currents. And another particular theory is, obviously, if you look at, you know, you've got the continents that split a lot of these oceans from each other. How is it possible that, you know, each of the oceans have a whole bunch of currents that take place? That also implies that there's, you know, potentially other particular anomalies or phenomena present. And some of these phenomena includes islands, particular depths in certain scenarios of the oceans. For example, there's a canyon here between Africa, Europe, and North America and South America. There's a trench here, in a straight line, but it's not across us from South America, from Namibia. It's from here, midway Africa, upwards into the Northern Hemisphere. There's a trench there. Even though the Mariana Trench is the deepest part in the Pacific Ocean, there's also a trench here with us, here in the Atlantic Ocean. So there are a myriad of things, primarily about, you know, how these currents work. One other thing specifically is also that when we got to look at the oceans, the Big Blue. Okay, that's Earth's name, actually, the Big Blue. When we look at the discussions around the oceans is potentially the last unexplored frontier of our planet. It's the last significantly impactful natural frontier still left on Earth to explore. There are parts of the oceans that don't have oxygen in them, even though it's made of water. Yes, go and look it up. There is organisms that don't produce oxygen at the bottom of some of our oceans. In many cases, we don't know what's at the bottom of the oceans. In many cases, you know, some of the scientists are asking, why are we trying to look to space to try and give answers if we've not even explored our ocean floors on planet Earth to try and understand and map the extent of the ocean floors of planet Earth. Very good statement, very good theory, and a very good scientific position to have, because that means we are possibly neglecting a sphere of the natural world that needs more attention than looking to space. But then obviously the space guys would come and tell you we need to understand the universe around us and what's actually going on. All right, so that's also a pretty good statement. When you look at, and just to end on the discussion of the Bermuda Triangle, the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA, I know, pretty poetic, they've stated themselves that regarding the Bermuda Triangle that there is no evidence that mysterious disappearances occur with any greater frequency in the Bermuda Triangle than in any other large, well-traveled area of the ocean. Let me say that again. There is no evidence that mysterious disappearances occur with any greater frequency in the Bermuda Triangle than in any other large, well-traveled area of the ocean. And that boaters and flyers continue to venture through the triangle without event. As mentioned, they still fly through it. They still sail through it. It's just there were certain observations made on certain days in human history. Now, we quickly take a short musical break, dear listeners, and we'll come back, but after this. We'll be right back. Coming back there from the sounds of Roxy Music with the song More Than This. Before that, you heard a little bit of a Hall & Oates in terms of the song with its name, Out of Touch. Bringing us up about 20 minutes out from the top of the hour at 7 a.m. Good morning, good morning, good morning once again. If you've just woken up, I do hope that you've at least procured yourself a lovely hot cup of something. The interpretation is up to you. Don't worry, it's up to you. You can interpret whatever you want or imagine that cup to contain that potentially might be warm. I'm assuming it's probably warm. But if it is warm, ensure that it's coffee, guys. Coffee is a godsend. I'm telling you, it is a godsend. It's probably the only thing that I can see humanity not go without. It's the blessing of coffee. Maybe a little bit of tea, but tea is for, you know, the other peoples. The peoples who love drinking tea, who don't like adventure. Nonetheless, we get back to where we left off, primarily with looking at the geographies, the interesting events, the disappearances, and the likes. We ended off with Bermuda Triangle, but I want to throw another, what do they call that? An anomaly into our discussion for today, which is known as Devil's Sea. Now, Devil's Sea, it's not as big in size, but it is slightly longer in distance than the Bermuda Triangle. And this is literally from the coast of Japan, and it follows a whole range of islands. It's known as the Izu Islands, which are considered to be the center of the particular, let's just call it the sort of like legend. Now, the Devil's Sea, and its Japanese name, Mono Umi, or no, not Mono, Ma no Umi, also known as the Devil's Triangle, or the Dragon's Triangle, or the Formosa Triangle, and the Pacific Bermuda Triangle, is a region in the Pacific Ocean, which is literally south of Tokyo. The Devil's Sea is sometimes considered a paranormal location though the veracity of these particular claims have also been questioned. Now, as I have to indicate here to you guys, this is pure speculation, specifically with this particular same anomaly. And the direction, the actual direction specifically of the Dragon's Triangle, that's the name I actually want to use, not the Devil's Triangle or the Devil's Sea, is... If you pull the surface air, if you had to sit with a map in front of you, you can literally pull a distance from Tokyo or way past Guam to a specific island, right opposite the island of Yap, which is primarily in the surface area. Now, it is described here that it's the possible form of the Dragon's Triangle, and this is due to a claim given by a survivor known as Berlitz, who claimed having many inconsistencies, and its exact form is also very unclear, meaning to what extent do people experience these anomalies, inconsistent with, you know, scenarios of loss of communication, so on and so forth. Now, the Japanese word Ma no Umi, which translates to the Devil's Sea, Troublesome Sea, or even Dangerous Sea, has been widely used to describe dangerous marine locations around the world. Now, this means that there are many locations that the Japanese call Ma no Umi. In August of 1945, a Mitsubishi A6M0, which is a military plane, a Japanese military plane, supposedly went missing. A distress radio transmission from Zero F Wing Commander pilot Shiro Kawamoto, crossing the triangle near the end of the war, created more questions than answers, because the last thing his message said was, something is happening in the sky and the sky is opening up. Now, on 4 January of 1955, a Japanese ship by the name of Shinyomaru number 10, lost radio contact near Mikurajima. Now, Japanese newspapers at the time then began to label the location as a Ma no Umi instance, until the ship was actually found safe on 15 January. Wow. A whole week later. Now, another scenario, Yomiuri Shimbun, showed a map of the sea with Shimbun most probably means newspaper. And it was a newspaper at the time. It still exists. The particular newspaper prints out of Tokyo, Osaka, Fukuoka, and other major Japanese cities. But Yomiuri Shimbun, one of the largest newspapers in Japan, showed a map of the sea with points of several other ships that have been lost in recent years. And it stated that those ships were lost within the area that the Yokohama Coast Guard Office had classified as a special danger area. Now, I looked at that office, not the Yokohama Office Coast Guard of Japan, more like the National Coast Guard of Japan. I looked at their website and I tried to find out if there's any particular resource that points towards them actually having some sort of fundamental report saying, please stay out of this particular geographic location. Or just beware of where you sail when you get on a boat. From these coordinates to these coordinates. Zero. Now, in the US, the New York Times introduced this particular incident with the term the Devil Sea as well, where 9 ships had been lost in perfect weather. Now, the Yomiuri Shimbun then described the size of the Mano Umi as follows. From the Itsu Islands to the east of the Ogasawara Islands, about 200 miles east to west and about 300 miles north to south, where 9 ships were lost in the past 5 years. However, 2 of the 9 ships were lost near Miyakijima and Iwo Jima, 2 specific islands, which were about 750 miles apart. That's about 1,000-something kilometers apart. In 1974, American paranormal writer Charles Berlitz introduced the Devil Sea in his book, The Bermuda Triangle. Yes, he was an author. Now, Berlitz claimed that 9 modern ships and several hundred crews were lost without trades or without traces between 1950 and 1954. And in 1955, the Japanese government sent the Kaiyo Maru No. 5 to the sea for investigating unexplained ship losses. But this ship also vanished as well. Now, after this incident, the Japanese authorities have labeled the sea as a danger zone. That's all they do. They just label it as a danger zone. Now, there's an updated illustration of the supposed danger zone. And it's not the first one that I explained a little bit earlier that was so long that it reaches the island, across the island of Yap, which is just below the island of Guam, which is pretty far away from Japan. Now, the new illustration describes that it's actually a square-like, a quadrangle, if you have to call it that. It's that weird square or rectangle. It's not evenly designed. It's got like one slightly smaller side, two longer sides that are not equal in length, and you know, one particular sort of like straight line to close it off at the top. And this is where the Japanese Coast Guard itself has classified as a special danger zone. So it's not as big as the Bermuda Triangle. It's not as long as firstly perceived to be by Berlitz. And the actual danger area specifically is, you know, where... And it's a specific small spot on this map as well that was also highlighted by another particular, you know, someone that was also fascinated by the Dragon's Triangle in its entirety. So... In 1975, this is now where criticism started popping up regarding the labeling and the explanations and the evidence provided for. In 1975, an American author by the name of Larry Kush published the Bermuda Triangle Mystery Solved book. That's his book, which debunks the Devil Sea legend. Now, Kush sent letters to government offices which were related to the sea, but nobody knew about the Devil Sea or such a particular dangerous area being in existence. So, the actual danger zone where the Maritime Safety Agency of Japan, that's its name, yeah, the Maritime Safety Agency of Japan, warned not to approach was only 10 miles to Myojinsho. Myojinsho is a specific island as well, off the coast of Japan. And it's actually, okay, Myojinsho is actually a submarine volcano located about 450 kilometers south of Tokyo. So it is within the Itsu Ogasawara Ridge, meaning those islands there that are clustered, they're close to Japan. The downside is Myojinsho is a underwater volcano close to the Japanese coast. Now, the Kaiyo Maru No. 5 was sent to Myojinsho for investigating activity of an undersea volcano and lost in 1952. The loss of the Kaiyo Maru was accounted for the following description: undersea volcano eruption. One of eight other lost ships was accounted for. Most of the nine ships were small fishing boats with poor or no radio, and the weather was not perfect. That was the actual report by the Maritime Safety Agency of Japan, meaning their Coast Guard. In 1995, Kush's research then claimed that Berlitz's military vessels were actually fishing vessels, and some of those that were listed by Berlitz sank outside the area defined by the Dragon's Triangle. Now, Kush also wrote that the Japanese research vessels carried not 100 personnel, but actually only 31, and that an undersea volcano destroyed it on 24 November 1952. 24 September 1952. Later on, in Daniel Cohen's 1974 book, Curses, Hexes, and Spells, it also reported that the legends of the danger of the Dragon's Triangle go back for centuries in Japan. Its most famous casualty was the number 5 Kaiyo Maru, which was a scientific research vessel, which disappeared with the loss of all hands, obviously as mentioned, in 1952, the same 24 September. Now, with such dramatic history, one would expect there to be all sorts of information on the subject, especially in Japan. Now, a search completed by a Skeptoid, by the Skeptoid author, Brian Dunning, for books, newspapers, and magazine articles on the Dragon's Triangle came up completely empty until a full 20 years after the loss of the Kaiyo Maru. And this, apparently, is the story that even the very existence of the legendary name was not invented until very recently. So the research also explores natural environments or natural environment changes as the cause of such controversial anomalies, specifically in the Dragon's Triangle, and then also that one of these particular explanations is the vast field of methane hydrates that are present on the bottom of the ocean floor in the specific vicinity known as the Dragon's Triangle. Methane clathrates, which are methane hydrate gas, will explode when it rises above 18 degrees Celsius. Methane hydrate gases are described as ice-like deposits that break off from the bottom and rise, forming bubbles on the surface of the water. These gas eruptions can interrupt buoyancy of a ship, can easily sink a ship, leaving no trace of debris. Another explanation for this paranormal activity, in inverted commas, would be the undersea volcanoes that are very common in the area. It is quite characteristic for small islands in the Dragon's Triangle to frequently disappear and new islands to appear due to both volcanoes and seismic activity. If you guys didn't know about that last particular part, 2 years back an island actually appeared in the Pacific Ocean. Yeah, you guys can go look it up. Islands that just appear or just disappear. It's as volcanic activity and tectonic plate activity cause these particular rises and falls. And it actually happens. It's a phenomena known to geologists. They know about this. And it's weird when you see an island come and go. It's very weird. It's super weird. Another particular interesting thing, obviously, from this particular engagement, dear listeners, is also, yes, in some cases things cannot be explained, and in other cases they actually can be explained. But there are a lot of questions still left, specifically with the Bermuda Triangle occurrences, because the Bermuda Triangle in its own right has developed into somewhat of a, how can I put it? into the realm of fantasy. Even though real life lives were lost, it has developed into this fantastical zone on planet Earth. But we still have to see, things still have to develop. They still, the best thing that you can actually conclude on is that we probably have to improve our technology specifically for search and rescue missions to try and locate lost aircraft, disappeared ships or vessels, and just improve on that scenario. We step into another musical break that'll bring us up to the end of this morning session, dear listeners, here on your number one talk radio station. This has been, or will actually come back after that short break, just to say our goodbyes. But this has been my Sunday morning take here on your number one talk radio station. Stay tuned for the other break, for the rest of the programming to continue after 7 a.m. But we'll be back right after this short musical break where I say my goodbyes, and we'll see each other just after this musical break.
Between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.